This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 418, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wondering in the night, what were the chances we'd be sharing love? Before the night was through.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 418. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
What is up?
And Paul Montgomery.
Yes.
They both have gone insane in the snowstorm.
Yes.
Red rum, red rum.
We are a fanboy.
What's up, Scatman?
We like comics, and we can read a bunch of comics. One of us reads all their comics, picks the best one, calls that the pick of the week. We talk about that on the show along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, and all the fun stuff. It may be snow, maybe Elephant Band of Brothers. Stuff. All kinds of fun things happen on the show. Elephant stuff if we want.
I have elephant stuff.
That's what my Craigslist ad says.
Before we get
Must
to the
do
show,
elephant stuff.
Quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so there'll be spoilers about things that happened this week. Some people died in the pick of the week we're going to talk about in a second. So if you haven't read that book yet, pause the show and come back later. Paul. Paul had the very first Archie Comics pick of the week in iFanboy history.
Is it really?
13 years of iFanboy.
Okay.
Very first.
None of the Sonic books made it?
No Sonic
Mega Man,
books.
Nope. Okay. So Afterlife with Archie, number three, it was finally in a week where Josh didn't have the pick.
Remind me to tell you about Sonic Guy later.
Okay. I think we all know a Sonic Guy. So we talk about how progressive Archie is, like editorially, especially, you know, for a publisher where the character and the characters and the world, like, feel like they're not trapped, but like they persist.
Yeah,
Brendan Fraser like in a Cold War bunker,
right?
But
well, there's a veneer of that.
There's a veneer of it,
or specifically Encino Man.
No, not Encino Man.
Blast from the Past.
Blast from the Past.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Carry on.
Encino Man's like about like he's a Neanderthal, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's not a bunker. That's a piece of ice. Yeah.
Well,
caveman lawyer. So everybody's usually like off to this. Everybody's usually off to the sock hop or at the malt shop or whatever. But what's interesting about Afterlife with Archie is that it's this whole different kind of throwback. And like you think about like Hitchcock movies and Hammer horror films and old pulp books and a lot of that is Francesco Francavilla, just creating that mood, creating that atmosphere, and just the way his finishes on his art. It looks like that vintage kind of horror style. But it's progressive in its way because you have this writer, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, who has...
That sounds better than how I pronounce it.
Yeah. who has this sort of this modern insight into how we'd perceive these characters today, which is why there's like this like incest subtext in issue two.
Right.
For those characters, they're not in this one, but it's why Veronica's dad, Mr. Lodge, feels kind of like the governor in this issue. And that makes a lot of sense. And this issue is called Lockdown, and most of it takes place in Lodge Manor instead of Manor Lodge, where all the kids have escaped, who have survived the dance, have come and they've sought shelter. And I love that it starts with this sort of flashback of Mr. Lodge. Is Hiram Lodge, is that his name?
Hiram Lodge, yeah.
Thinking back on how he first came to Riverdale and built his estate with his own hands, by God. And his wife is pregnant, and I love the scene where she's on the train. She has since died. She died like she's been dead. Like, she didn't die in this event.
No.
It was just always Veronica and her dad and Smithers, the butler. So anyways, she's on.
Smithers is like Black Ops too.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. It's
he's like Alfred.
It's like Michael Caine Alfred. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, Veronica's mother, Hermione, is on the train, and she encounters these sort of weird women who can perceive that she's carrying, like a dark haired, female child. And you realize as the scene progresses that those are Sabrina's aunts from Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And it's just this weird, spooky scene on a train. And it reminded me of like Strangers on a Train or like The Lady Vanishes. And they create this really creepy mood. And it's just a really smart use of the character and of the characters and the world. And I'm just continually impressed by this book and how smartly written it is. And even though it's like super melodramatic, it's knowingly.
It works for the tone and the characters. I mean, it works for the story.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like no fainting couches or anything, but it has that great, it's like dark shadows. That's what it feels like.
Are we saying that fainting couches are wrong? Because if they are, I don't want to be
saying
right, faint, Paul.
Like when I say melodrama, it's not like super over the top. I think
like
it's
the beginning of Masterpiece Theater,
right,
when they had that woman to faint on top of the building and drop her handkerchief down.
Yeah.
Now, I had two thoughts while reading this book. One, if this is truly an ongoing, they better stop killing off characters, at least as quickly as they are. In this issue,
Don't they come back undead?
Yeah, they come back as zombies, but then you have no more protagonists to follow.
Right.
You just switch it to a zombie-based protagonist like that.
like Jughead is already out. Like, Jughead is already out of the picture, like, the first issue.
Well, that
like,
was
so right. You have Archie.
Attention.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. He's the Black Goliath of Afterlife with Archie.
Oh.
But,
unfortunate name.
And this issue, Moose and Midge get it. But
yeah.
The other thought I had was that I can accept it a little bit more in the regular Archie world because it's so cartoony and, as you say, in that bubble, that Norman Rockwell bubble. But in a more sort of realistic setting with realistic art and everything, I'm just looking at Betty going, have some goddamn self-respect. Because there's a scene where Archie's going to run off to check on their family. So he's going to sneak out of the lodge and she's helping him. And she's trying to get him to profess some feelings for her. He tells her that, no, he's going to waffle on this one between Veronica and Betty for another 70 years. And I'm just looking at her going, man, move on.
Yeah, it's like she's worried about his safety. And his way of consoling her is to say, no, I will continue to live for many, many years. And in that time, I will still not know if I love you or Veronica. And they're escaping from like the pantry.
Yeah.
And it's the one place where he used to sneak into the manor to make out with Veronica. And he's telling
her, this is where I used to go to make out with Veronica. And I'm just like, man, Betty, Jesus, find someone else.
I think it works for the tone, though. I think it's
no, totally,
I just think it's a great insight on the characters and how sort of absurd it all
is. I just found it interesting how I don't even think about that in the regular Archie books. But for some reason in this one, it really hit me like, God. You know, get a better boyfriend.
And I like that they have a pool that has a cover on it, which is in the grand tradition of stories like It's a Wonderful Life and right. West Wing, where they have a pool maybe under the press briefing room. All great stories have a pool that has a cover on it.
Also, and Mr. Lodge is Commissioner Gordon.
He is just kind of Commissioner Gordon, yeah.
Just straight up Franco Freya drawing Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. And we've got another maybe zombie dog is the cliffhanger. But no, I think this is a really impressive book, and
just from our standpoint alone, I mean that zombie dog at the end, which may just be an angry dog. No, he's got blood coming out of his mouth. He's a zombie dog. Just a great use of negative space in that image.
He could be eating strawberries or something.
That's true. We'll find out next month, I guess. But if you're a Frank Avia fan, you should just leaf through it. It's a wonderful. The shot of Archie standing in front of a burning Pop Tates was a great page.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's really, it's structured really interestingly. Like he comes upon Pop Tates, and then you see how it came to be burning.
Right.
And there's some, you know, interesting parallel storytelling going on. And you mentioned, like, you know, if this is an ongoing and how it's going to sustain that. They released a cover today where it looks like it's not going to be just zombies.
Uh-oh.
It looks like there's more sort of like, I don't know, Lovecraftian, like...
Well, we've already got witches.
Blob creatures and, yeah.
It's not called zombies with Archie. It's called Afterlife. So that's all right. All those creatures fall into the Afterlife category, so... You know, you could have werewolves show up and fight the zombies, and that could sustain things for a while. I would totally be into that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, they're really often the major Archie players at a furious clip, and I think they need to slow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm saying they should make it, they should, I have no dog in this fight, by the way. I'm just, you know, talking.
You should check it out. You would like the art.
But I don't even get the, okay, I mean, that's fine. But yeah, like,
you'll get it through context. You know.
I just don't care.
That's okay.
I don't really like Archie, and I don't really like zombies, so
it's a you tough like good thing. Art.
There's no shortage of that. I can get good art along.
That's reasonable.
With.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing from you is you don't care about Francisco Francavilla.
I knew that you were going to turn that personal.
And if you saw him at a convention, you'd spit on him.
That's what I heard.
I have.
Well, he's Italian.
I insulted him,
and you don't like Italians either.
I said "Baffangul," and I sort of brushed my chin, I guess, in that way. Malone, I said, and then I said something to him about flushing it down the pishadu. But
well, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know what I was saying. I was eating a baguette at the time, so that was weird.
Well, those are delicious. Let's talk about Young Avengers 15.
Favorite segue ever.
The end of Kieran Gillen, Jamie McKelvey, and Mike Norton's run on Young Avengers. This is part two of the Resolution storyline, which is basically the year-end party, which I really was hoping for more of a party atmosphere for these two issues. But really, it was just sort of the party was happening in the background, but that's fine.
That would have been boring reading.
It was kind of melancholy.
I wanted to bring this up because I had sort of said near the end of the last few issues that I had lost the thread of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going on, and now I do know what went on. I actually really enjoyed the end of it. I thought it was a night. I feel like he hit, when I say he, I'm saying Kieran Gillen specifically hit notes on this with me that I think passed over me when they did Phonogram for the first time. I mean, clearly, like, it's the same guy who did that.
Mm-hmm.
There was something about, I don't even relate to it that much, but there's something about the party, music, dance, community, whatever the cathartic effect of all that is, that's interesting, that he's exploring, I think. And I like how it is, what I like about it now is it's personal to the creators, or at least the writer, and I think that comes through, and that makes it interesting to me, and then to see how he takes that and folds it into this story, and that's unusual. Like I read this and I thought, there are a lot of gay people in this book, not as a negative, but wow, that's pretty progressive for the whole thing was pretty progressive for a Marvel comic, and I was impressed.
The whole team minus Hawkeye.
Yeah, basically. But even at the end, she was like, you know, let's see what we got going on. But I don't know.
She's young. She's in college.
I just liked that it was very different than. Like as a series, like it was very odd and out of place with the whole sort of line of everything, and I liked that it was going on as an experiment. And at the end, I liked it because I liked the characters. I also really dug. I have to look at it so I can remember my thought on this, but I liked that the very last thing of it was, you know, is this just Billy creating an avatar of an avatar? Like there's a sort of a deeper sort of level to it. I think that was really neat.
Yeah. I think McKelvey draws a great Tom Hiddleston.
It's yes. Yes.
The very last sequence is basically drawing them, you know. I like the art in this issue, too. I mean, they had...
I like the opening story with Becky Cloonan.
If you haven't been reading the last two issues, they've been sort of anthology pieces of all the characters featuring different artists, and I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
It was good.
I thought it was a satisfying ending, and it was melancholy, and it had drunk America Chavez, and even like the last page was a little
drunk in quotes.
Yeah, it was a little hokey, but like it was touching still, and I thought it was drawn really well, and like Loki at one point looks up, you know, he's looking at them leaving, but he's looking at us also at the same time. It's just really nice acting and storytelling. I was really pleased.
I liked the integration of the Instagram. I liked it from the beginning.
I normally hate that.
Right.
I'm at the point now where I forget what book I was reading this week, but there's a if you have tweets in a book, I just can't stand it. It was a thing.
I don't know, man. I mean, at this point, this is how life is now, right?
What was I reading? I forget. Probably something I didn't want to talk about for some reason.
If you want to, you know, make these comics reflective of modern life, this is what people do. Right.
But it's very difficult to make it authentic, and they did a really good job both in scripting it, conceptualizing it, and just, you know, recreating the OS. Like, it's... it just feels it's not like an episode of Law and Order where they're going on Face Union, you know, where they have their profiles and stuff. I love those because it's not consistent. Like they make up a new Facebook
every time. It's different.
Yeah.
Oh, Law and Order. So let's talk about the Detective Comics 27, which is also an anthology or I guess it's an anniversary issue.
It's an anniversary issue with all the heavy hitters currently writing Batman books.
I guess,
and this was, in a grand tradition of anniversary issues. So you've got a Brad Meltzer, Brian Hitch story, a Greg Hurwitz, Neil Adams story, a Peter Tomasi, Ian Bertram story with really interesting indie art style, Francisco Francavilla written drawn story, a Mike Barr, Guillaume March story, John Layman, Jason Fabuc story, which ties into the overall Detective Comics story that's going on, and then there's Scott Snyder, Sean Murphy story.
I like how you say Fabuc.
I do too, and there's also some pinups throughout.
Yeah, Jock and people like that. So Mike Graham, Nolan, Josh, Paul. Which was your favorite?
I thought the one that's the Gothamopolis was very interesting. It's not my favorite. Gothamtopia.
That's like the main story that's being continued on into the other Batman books.
It's a very interesting concept, and it's sort of the idea that it's like, I don't know, Batman in Pleasantville. Like everything's fine and nice, but there's this sinister undertone that, you know, we know what Gotham is really like, and they describe it early on as, you know, Gotham is the happiest, you know, sunniest city in the world, and you're like, wait, no, it's not, no, and Batman is wearing white. It's a white bat suit, and I just thought it was kind of funny in terms of like introducing sunnier versions of the Bat family. So instead of Robin or Catwoman, you have Catbird, which is Selina as a half Catwoman, half Robin Ward character, which was a little bit. I don't know. And then like all the different Birds of Prey characters as like, you know, it's a much more lighthearted thing. But I think that my favorite was the last one was the Scott Snyder 27 story, because it feels like a great spark for a longer story.
Yeah, that was a good one. My favorite by far was Old School, the Greg Hurwitz, Neil Adams story, which I think Josh would have liked because it was very much about comic book storytelling. So it was a meta tale of Batman and Robin through the ages.
Dot Pitch in the beginning. And so like Golden Age Batman story.
Yeah, the Golden Age story starts off with the characters talking about what they were doing, and then it changes to thought balloons, and then it changes to captions, and then their costumes change throughout. It was actually really well done sort of take on how these characters have evolved over the years, their villains, how their villains are, and just the way they communicate, how the story's communicated and everything. It was actually really interesting, although there was a really sort of heavy-handed thank you to Bob Kane at the end. There's a lot of interesting meta stuff going on in this issue, because some people thanked Bill Finger, some people thanked Bob Kane.
Yeah, that was kind of weird and uncomfortable.
I mean, Bob Kane's the official DC recognized creator of Batman, so that makes sense. But then some of those stories were basically thank yous to Bill Finger, which is the many people believe the actual creator of Batman. That was interesting. I really like the art in the Peter Tomasi story. Very unlike DC.
That was very like it felt like a combination of not Frank Quitely, but
a little bit of Quitely in there.
A little bit of that and Dr. Seuss in the line work. Like you're looking at 75-year-old Bruce Wayne and like looking at his back and just the way the hair is drawn.
Right.
It's very much the way that Dr. Seuss would do texture. Which yeah, it's I thought interesting. Was kind of cool.
The following joke, by the way, is just for Connor. It looks like the art in that Tomasi story is by that cat Bytrim.
So if you listen to if you listen to the book Explode that I did with Scott Snyder on Batman Year 100 by Paul Pope, he teases this 27 story quite a bit, and it's
Batman 100 story. Kind
you of. Can you can totally see because it's actually Batman Year like 200, where it's very much following in that idea that it's Batman as a legacy, and it's not just the Robins taking on the mantle of Batman or his own offspring. It's like a new guy takes it up every 25 years or whatever.
I think it was 17 years, wasn't it? Something weird.
There's a lot of math, and it was sort of like each Batman has like a shelf life of 27 years. And after 25 years, they start the process again, creating a new Batman, and you get your own sort of rogues, and you fill up the Batcave with your own stuff, and everybody sort of has a rite of passage with the Joker and learning what that's all about. And Sean Murphy art looked really great, really interesting versions of Batman, the Black Robin that we've been hearing so much about. A little bit of like a Batman Beyond kind of vibe to it, but even beyond that, there's like a the old Batman who's on his way out is sort of like a samurai looking Batman, or it was just really interesting world. I want to see more of that, so I hope that he follows up and does something.
Did this one have the It's a Wonderful Life esque story, or did I read it somewhere else?
Tell me more.
Where Bruce sees what life would have been like if he hadn't been Batman. Did I read that somewhere else?
I think you read that somewhere else. That's not.
So I've been reading a lot of comics this morning, so I didn't. Oh no, it's in this one. I'm trying to load it here. It's the Mike W. Barr Guillaume March story where Phantom Stranger shows Bruce what would happen.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
If the parents hadn't died in the alley,
I thought you'd like that because there's Phantom Stranger in it.
Oh, I love that. This was a very classic sort of DC story. Phantom Stranger shows up.
Phantom Stranger sound like Jimmy Stewart.
Kind of. Actually, that would be awesome.
You'd sound like Clarence. You'd sound like.
So he shows Bruce what it would have been like.
Bruce
and
sounds like Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
And Bruce Wayne's got his family and the parents are still there and they're living in sort of their fortress apartment because Gotham is a cesspool and Ra's al Ghul's taken over half of Europe and Dick Grayson's on death row for killing Tony Zucco. It was just really nice for the classic old mystical story with the Phantom Stranger. That was really cool. It was a good issue. Really, really good issue, I thought. Really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna read it. I didn't think to for some reason. I saw it. Everyone talking about it all around, but I don't think I knew what it was. So that's good. And apparently that's a problem with.
So it's Batman.
If it was a big issue, I would have noticed that in the store. But since I don't buy the issues in the store, I just thought that's bad.
It was super big. It was like 80-something pages.
Yeah. I would have been like, "What's that?" I would have seen all the covers on the front. So this is a drawback of digital that I've just discovered.
Well, this was funny because there was some big hullabaloo about it. Originally it was supposed to have a Frank Miller cover. And then they solicited that, and then they changed it, and people are, stores are freaking out. But the Frank Miller cover was terrible. It's in the bag.
The Capullo cover is gorgeous.
Yeah, the Capullo cover is great. The Frank Miller cover is awful. I mean, I'm a Frank Miller fan, but that was not a good cover.
If you read it in digital, it's at the back.
It's like he found an old piece of art and gave it to him.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. All right, Josh, what is minimum wage? I was going to read it, but I ran out of time.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I wanted you to because I thought you'll dig it, I think. But I knew it was a big week, and that always makes it hard to stick more stuff in. That and your endless parade of house guests. So a while back, I got a book from Image called Maximum Minimum Wage, and it was this big hardcover collection, and I'd never heard of Bob Fingerman or the book. But there was I noticed that there was a foreword by Robert Kirkman, And I thought, that's unusual. He doesn't really do that that often, even though he has a stake in Image. And then later, somebody mentioned the guy again. I was at a thing, and I was at that Star Wars Minute thing, and he was there, and he knew some of my friends who were sort of indie cartoonists. And so this issue, Minimum Wage, came out this week, and I thought I'd give it a shot. And what it is that this was an indie comic that – when I say indie comic, this is what I think Connor and I think of when we say indie comic.
Totally.
Not me.
What's that?
Not me.
I don't know.
Well, this feels very much like, and I'm looking through it and I didn't read it, but it looks like an 80s indie underground comic.
I guess the definition of what an indie comic is has changed generationally, and I just wasn't sure if you were around for this. But when I think of it, I think of Dan Clowes and Adrian
Crump.
And Crump, guys just sitting there talking. Whereas indie comic now is a different connotation, and I don't know what that means for you, but I'm willing to listen.
Yeah, it sort of feels like... American Splendor.
Yeah. Anyway, it took me a couple of pages to get into it because it's obviously very sort of self-involved because it's a person writing some version of their life, and there's more talking than you're used to. It's not really so much about storytelling. It's about sort of spending time with a person, experiencing their life as you go. And I haven't read anything like that in a while. And I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about this is that it was just that. It was sort of that pure kind of comic story. And I haven't read stuff like this in such a long time. I used to love it. And then there was so much of it at a certain point that it got to be too much. And now there isn't any left, other than sort of going back and reading old, Chester Brown stuff or whatever. Anyway, he published his last issue, I guess, of this in 97 or 98, and this is the first new material that Bob Fingerman has done since then. He's doing more issues of this. And I hadn't read that other book. I'm going to read it now. But basically, it's a story of he's a 25-year-old cartoonist, and he's been divorced, and he's living in, like, Queens in Long Island. And he goes out and this takes place in the year 2000. He works getting most of his income doing pornography comics for like porn mags. But like he goes into the office and they're telling him this job is going to go away. No one's going to be paying for this. And he's because he's divorced, he decides to get back out there. But like he goes to a club in Long Island, and it's not my life at all. But I don't know. I had fun being in this world and sort of reading this kind of comic. I'd missed this kind of comic is what I was reminded of, and I think you'll dig it too. I don't know, Paul. Did you know what it is, or does it sound like something you'd want to read?
It definitely sounds like something I want to read. Not just because it's the pornography, but just like the, I don't know.
Very little pornography.
Like I was excited when like the new Optic Nerve came out earlier this year, and that's sort of that kind of thing and like slice of life.
It is.
Kind of.
The thing about Optic Nerve is that Adrian Tamayo is a very good draftsman.
It's like, polished. I think part of it's the polishedness versus the roughness of it. And this feels very rough, which is what comics. When Josh and I were young, indie comics were. They were rough.
Yeah,
Tomine's a bit more, craftsman.
Also, I can't take Optic Nerve. I find it soul jarring. It's just this like numb sadness the whole way.
I liked the previous one more. I forget what number they're up to, but I see what you mean.
It was absolutely beautiful. I always loved it, but I love the way it looked, but I couldn't read it. And it was like. Because they were just those little vignettes of like a few pages at a time. It was like, here's this sad, awkward thing. Here's another sad, awkward thing. It was this endless procession of no story and just, I do feel like that, but I don't need to be reminded of it constantly.
No, but that's what I would think of if you said, indie comic or independent comic. But when someone brings up independent comics, like it's like when someone says hipster, like it means something else for.
Yeah, that's true.
In terms of what it actually means, that's what I think of. And, like Scud the Disposable Assassin and things like that. I don't know.
But see, it's funny because I think when I think of it, it's almost not like it's a genre that used to be what I would think of as indie comics, and that's not a thing anymore, I guess. Which is good because now indie means not Marvel or DC, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
let's swing to the exact opposite side of the spectrum for Black Widow number one, the new book from Marvel, from the all new Marvel Now. This is the Next Wave. It was Marvel Now. Now it's all new Marvel Now.
And Next Wave are different comics also.
Right.
Yes.
Black Widow number one from Nathan Edmondson and Phil Noto. And I thought this was really fun. I thought Noto was on top of it.
Yeah.
One of the best things about the world now is that there's more Phil Noto art in it.
Yeah.
Like, there was a while where there wasn't any Phil Noto art. There was like occasional Jonah Hex, maybe a cover here and there. But that's not the case. I dug this. I enjoyed it. I'm hit and miss with Nathan Edmondson. Mm-hmm. I find his work to be very technically precise. Like, his action sequences are really good, but sometimes I don't connect with it very much. And I'm not sure if I do connect with this. But the combination of him and Noto at the same time is pretty sweet.
I think with this and he's also doing Punisher. Those are pretty spot on, you know, choices for him in terms of a portfolio of stuff to work on this year. So I'm excited for both of these. I guess we get Punisher next month. So I'd be excited which ones we sort of latch onto, if not both. I love the coloring on this.
I just love at the beginning, you just see art by Phil Noto, and you're like, yeah, that's the way it should be. Just Phil Noto does the art. He doesn't need anybody else to take that, Jordy Belair. Take that.
Oh, it was very, very, like, really nice warm colors or cool colors depending on the mood, and just it, like, interesting color choices. Like, it's sort of like ambient color instead of just like what color should a chair be? It's what color is the air in the room? What's the mood? And you know, very, like, super cool spy op stuff. I like the choice that she doesn't like confrontation. It's just a means to an end, or it's like the last, if it's the very last thing she can do, last choice, she will go in for the confrontation. Always good when somebody is hiding on the bottom of something, like, or like on a ceiling.
So hard. It's a strong core.
Have you ever tried that? I tried to do that on like in my shower.
What?
I really think that you would look up and see that.
You would. I was big into, like, the Pink Panther movies and, like, you know, like, Kato attacking, you know, Inspector Clouseau, right, like, just jumping out of nowhere. So,
for whatever reason, Phil Noto is allowed to do things that I don't let other artists get away with.
Like,
I'm
what?
Looking at, like, sort of the last couple pages, and these are clearly, like, pasted in photos of the buildings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I hate that, usually. Or like, the last page where he's got the rack focus on the spider in her face. Which could be cheesy, but for whatever reason, the dude can pull it off, and I'm totally fine with it. He's gotten so much better. Do you remember, like, the problem used to be that his stuff was too stiff?
Yeah, he wasn't very good at storytelling. He was a great pinup artist.
Yeah, but this...
But he's gotten a lot better.
He's gotten a lot. This, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's a 12-panel page in here, Dubai 36 Hours Later, with the elevator thing. That is just wonderful. Actually, there's an extra panel, so it's...
There's some great defenestration in this issue. Always good.
Good stuff. I thought this was fun.
Yeah. I think he's doing his own lettering, too. Or at least sound effects lettering.
Yeah, I think sound effects lettering. There's a letter in the beginning.
Off to a good start.
Hey, kids. The holidays are still just ending, depending on where you live. And,
I don't understand that at all.
Some of you still haven't taken your tree down,
like Australia, or
if you're like me and you've had guests in your house since the holidays, just left. So you just feel like the holidays are finally ended. I have
still got some Rolos left over from your stockings,
holiday chocolate and things like that. But you're like Josh said last week, you're probably gonna look for stuff to get yourself that you didn't get for Christmas or Hanukkah this year. So, you know, head over to Amazon via ifanboy.com/Amazon to pick up your purchases. Hey, you may have discovered a book about the German and American army fighting together in World War II. Oh. You didn't know even existed. So now you might want to buy that. And you do that at ifanboy.com/Amazon.
Kind of cool World War II battle. You never even...
Something you never even heard of.
Is that the book I got you, or is that something else?
No, there's a new book out, Paul, that about apparently a battle at the end of the war, which the German and American soldiers teamed up to fight an SS unit.
Okay.
Because the SS were like the super German army.
Like those, like the Japanese guys who hid in the mountains and wouldn't give up, even though Hirohito had signed it.
This is for guys like Josh and I who thought we knew a lot of things about the World War II. It's kind of a game changer. So you might want to check that out on Amazon, or you might want to go to fanboy.com/registration. For $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help with the keep the lights on, keep the equipment up to date, keep all the... We were just talking to Paul earlier about things he needed to upgrade because he might have had some problems. So...
We're talking about his knee.
Yeah, well, his knee is hip.
You hear this creaking sound in the background?
So if you want to help iFanboy, those are the two best ways, through iFanboy.com/Amazon or iFanboy.com/registration. And we thank each and every one of you who do so.
It's always exciting when you find a new World War II story and it doesn't have, like, you know, vampires or zombies in it.
That's the key to a good
but World Paul, War II story. But, Paul, the book you got me for Christmas, the World War II book, I have next on my list. So
okay,
it's on
good.
The top of my stack.
I'm just happy you didn't have it already, because that's
no,
what happens.
I did not have it. It sounds awesome. And it's, yeah. I don't know if you looked at it. Oh, you didn't look at it because you got it from Amazon,
right.
like a good soldier. But I'm looking through the middle pictures, which are always awesome, full of very British spies in World War II. It's going to be an awesome book.
That's why I figured that sounds like a Connor book.
It's a very, very particular guy.
Billy Harrow.
Exactly. Bunch of Oxford grads. Go, Paul, go.
All right, so I checked out, and I started with number 4, Shaolin Cowboy.
Love it.
Because my pick this week. And I was like, I'm going to read more than I usually do, and I'm going to read something just surprising. I was like, let's check out Shaolin Cowboy. I like the Jeff Darrow. I've got some prints of his from New York Comic Con that I still haven't hung up. But I love the Jeff Darrow. This was a great...
You should hang those up. It took him 15 years to draw.
I know. This was a great choice, starting with number 4. And we actually got an email from a listener saying that he did the same thing, and he was glad that he did it. He's not going back and reading the first three. And I think that's a good choice, too. This book is like 30 pages... of Shaolin Cowboy, who is, you know, part Shaolin monk, part cowboy, beating the shit out of some zombies. Like, it's just 30 pages of Jeff Darrow goodness, and it's just it's silent.
I say.
Action sequences, and it's like he's, like, punching through guys' necks, and, like, just, it's insane. And it's, like, not even a lot of, like, switch-ups on the angle. It's just, like, it's a continuous... grizzly fight. And if you love Jeff Darrow, you will enjoy this quite a bit. And then there's like some story stuff at the end of it, which I didn't quite get because I hadn't read the first three issues, but it's worth it just for those 30 pages. And so I challenge you next week, go out and pick up like issue 16 of something that you haven't read the first 15, and you might be surprised and find something like this. So
Shaolin Cowboy. This Kirkman chap on The Walking Dead, he's got something. 119 issues of The Walking Dead in, and it occurred to me the other day that he's basically, I don't know, he's not a show running it, but he's working on a television program that's probably quite useful of his
complex
time,
yes,
is what I'm getting at. And he's still making the comic books. And the comic books,
and he's very active in running Image.
Yeah, yeah, and the comic books haven't really suffered for that. I find this very interesting. I wanted to bring this up there in the middle of the All Out War story, and it keeps going back and forth. And you think that the good guys have the hand up, and then they don't. And I've really been impressed by the plotting in terms of keeping this thing going, although it does feel slightly interminable. Because like they just keep going back and forth. There's like some attrition, and then it goes the other way. And I was actually very surprised at the end of this issue by a thing that happened. I'm invoking the Walking Dead rule right now.
Right.
So if that's you've fair. Read it, you'll know. And if not, but there was a thing in the last issue where Negan, who is the bad guy, did something that was surprising and absolutely necessary. He basically stopped a character from raping somebody. And at the beginning, I thought, oh God, comics cannot handle another rape scene right now. In general, we can't. We just that's enough. And so the bad guy stopped that from happening. And then that played into what happened at the end of this issue, which actually surprised me. And I was impressed by it. And then there's an ad for the little Negan action figure. And if I was still into action figures, I would totally get that because it's pretty cool.
Paul, did you read Avengers World number 1?
I did, and
is there a point?
It's a surprise reunion of Secret Warriors. Basically.
Yeah, I picked it up because I missed the Avengers. I dropped off during Infinity. I wasn't really feeling that story, so I dropped all the Avengers books. But I missed those characters, so I picked this up, and it's fun. It's still full of characters I don't really care about on the Avengers side, and it's also seems to still be tied into Infinity somehow. But I don't know because I'm not reading it.
There's also some stuff from Secret of Avengers, which Spencer was doing with AIM. There's a lot of stuff going on with AIM.
Right, I've been reading that, so that's okay. This is Hickman nominally writing, but Spencer really writing, and Stefano Caselli, is that who the artist is?
Yeah, and it was Hickman and Caselli and Bendis on Secret Warriors, which I liked quite a bit when that was coming out. And there's some of the same bad guys as, like, Corgan and... There's like all Hydra stuff, and yeah, so...
This seems to be, from what it says in the back, the Avengers on Earth book, like Avengers World, where they're facing world catastrophes. So in this issue, they're split up into six different teams fighting all over the globe. And it was
It's like Avengers International, yeah.
It was a bit jarring simply because there was so many scene changes constantly, but...
Yeah.
I did enjoy it for the most part, and I had fun with it.
It's not my favorite group of Avengers. They're not my favorite Avengers characters. It's Hyperion and Smasher and a lot of the characters that Hickman brought in at the beginning of his Avengers run. And
those new universe characters, I don't care anything.
Yeah, it's not really, my bag. But it's I think the villains are more interesting. I think.
I'm going to stick with it because I like those Miss the Avengers, but I'm also on a short leash on it because I don't really care about the Infinity stuff.
And I think Spencer is on a roll lately with this and like Superior Foes of Spider-Man, and so I'm going to see where he takes us.
Star Wars number 13. This was an issue featuring a guest artist, Facundo somebody, Facundo Percio. Just actually a wonderful name to say. The thing I liked about this issue is that it basically focused. I did that thing where you zoom in and you focus on one of those Imperial officers. This one is Ensign Nanda, and she has been just sort of randomly recruited by Vader to do a bunch of stuff for her. I related to this oddly enough. she's just in the middle of all this stuff, and she's got to get through. And with the idea like, if I screw up at all, Vader's probably going to choke me. But Vader's also sort of oddly supportive to her, and she sort of gets the ropes of how things work, and she's with a crew of, like, really, really roughneck stormtroopers, not the guys who are stationed on the Death Star, but, like, real good ones.
Black Ops.
Yeah, the Black Ops stormtroopers. They have that shoulder pad. I dug this, the sort of...
Vader might not just choke you. He may take your faith and smash it into a table.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there was a blockade runner in this, which is one of my favorite ships.
I laughed because, as horrible as it is, I kind of like it when Vader chokes out.
He could choke out
Imperial officers.
That's fine.
That's fine. Yeah, yeah. So that was fun. It does. This series does play a little flat, fast, and loose with the quote unquote rules of the universe. But I'm trying to look beyond that and just enjoy the stories.
Yeah.
What do you mean the rules of the universe?
Well, traditionally speaking, the reason why it was explained in the films all the Imperials were white British men is because the Empire was not really supportive of women or minority, other races. So
right.
The idea, well, just the girl in this is dark skinned.
No, I know that. And I thought
you mean in the trilogy. You mean are there?
Yeah, well, Lando. But
my point was more a larger because they've got other species to be.
Well, that was the thing they didn't like. I don't know
that much. I don't know.
I don't.
I thought the same thing, but I let it go.
Well, they have Admiral Thrawn later on, who's blue.
That was a heavy thing in that book, too.
There was an alien thing, though. There was definitely...
Anyway!
In the books, there was an alien species problem, definitely.
Yes.
The point is, I am enjoying it, even with having to look beyond my inherent sort of rules for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Connor, do a Chewbacca growl. Okay.
Right. Cataclysm, The Ultimate's Last Stand, number 3. Have you guys been giving up with this one too?
I have been reading.
Have you been giving up with this?
I haven't been giving up.
Keeping up. So in this issue, this was the one where the characters from the Ultimate Universe cross over into the 616 universe. And I said with pain in my mouth. To try to find a way to stop Galactus.
It's finally catching on to the point where we just are like, fine, 616.
Fuck it.
Whatever. I read this because you put it on the list.
And I thought it was fun. I was looking forward to them finally crossing over. I was hoping for more character interaction, though. I thought it was funny when evil Reed Richards and Miles Morales go across to find a solution, and they go to the Baxter Building, and they're able to get in because Reed has the same voice pattern, and he's basically Reed Richards. But they are discovered, and the Herbie bots attack them, and Miles takes them on a chase through Manhattan, and they, you know, cross over with Superior Spider-Man. They end up chasing him instead, and I thought that was funny.
Pretty good, Bagley.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I thought really like that. You just mentioned the Herbie bots going after him. That first page of the Herbie bots all shooting at him. That worked for the sort of this is how messed up this is. I think Bendis is this issue and the Spider-Man issue. They're good old fun books still. You know.
Yeah.
I'm
wavering on whether or not this is going to mean the end of the Ultimate Universe. I keep changing my mind every time
like
I read.
It does. But I feel like, you know, Miles will live on over there.
Did you guys see the news earlier?
I don't follow the news.
There's a new line of Ultimate books that are coming out.
Yes. I thought in this issue it felt a little less doom. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, no, they're not going to do it. I kind of do too.
Just because I want to see them do that. It's
a lot of them are going to make it out like Miles is, you know, there's going to be a Miles book. There's going to be a Future Foundation book in FF or Ultimate FF. So they're sort of reconfiguring the line. Yeah. So it will exist in some form, and Bendis will be involved.
I thought when this thing started that they were definitely going to do it. But then as it's gone on, and then this issue particularly, I thought, no, they're not actually going to do
it.
Well,
they did a good job of sort of like setting up the red herring or whatever for us.
No, they totally did.
I also like the second to last page when Evil Reed sort of is like, I screwed up. I saw my daughter. That sucks.
He's like, I never noticed how beautiful the world is. I'm like, man, that's bad timing.
I really liked that.
Lately.
I really liked that. I mean, it's sort of cheesy, but it summed it up. And it's like, what's the difference between this guy and the other one? Is that the other guy was allowed to have a family. By the way, Franklin Richards, he'd be what, 45, 46 now?
We'll lose track.
Yeah, kind of.
He'd be just settling to old age, getting some heart blood pressure pills. Fine.
He's got a high cholesterol problem.
That's definitely.
Anyway, those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Let's do a quick bit on the book of the month for January, which may surprise some, but not others. It is my decision. It's my selection. It's Green Arrow.
You mean that we have a book for January in January?
Yes, well, that's also surprising. Green Arrow, Volume 1, Hunter's Moon. And this was the first collection of the Mike Grell series. So this is the first post... Longbow Hunters collection, which has never been collected before. And I was always of the opinion it was never going to get collected because it was just too different from... the Green Arrow you know now.
Shit's dark.
But it is because, and I think I like to think part of it's because of the popularity of the Arrow show, which I think lends a lot to this book. But let's talk about what this book was. It was a big deal. And I think I read this when I was a kid. I'm trying to get the timing here. This came out in 1980. Well, Longbow Hunters was 87. This was 88, I believe.
His run was 88 through 98.
Yeah, so I was – also, that's a super long run, but I was –
That's a really long run.
Yes, I was 11 years old when this book came out, and Green Arrow was always one of my favorite characters, and my older friend was reading it, and I'd read issues at his house, and I was like, what is this? Because this is basically –
Connor's older friend, he was a 65-year-old librarian. let's be honest about that.
His name was Noah. He lived on the floor below us. All right, so –
It was a very Harold and Maude situation.
This was a Vertigo book before there was a Vertigo. And it reads very much like a Swamp Thing from that era. It reads very much like Sandman from that era. The art is even of that era. It totally fits into that look and feel of those mature comics from that time that led to Vertigo's creation. It wasn't a Vertigo book. It wasn't ever labeled a Vertigo book, but it very much
Karen
was.
Karen Berger didn't edit it, did she?
Let's see. Who edited this book?
I don't think so.
I don't believe so
Mike
either.
Gold.
But, I mean, it has that feel. And Paul, am I wrong? Am I completely crazy in that? And that feels like that kind of that era?
Yeah. You're crazy, and it does feel like that era. So on art, you've got...
I mean, in this instance, not in general. Obviously, I'm crazy.
You got Ed Hannigan, Dick Giordano, and Frank McLaughlin. With Crazy Colors by Julia Lacumet.
It's interesting that like DC stalwart editor-in-chief Dick Giordano was editing, was inking this book. What made this an mature, and it was labeled mature readers on the cover.
Yes.
Yeah, but he was also like the head of the, you know, like he's the most like DC guy there was.
Quesada did books for a while.
No, I'm not saying because he was head of the chief. I mean, because he's like sort of the stalwart Silver Age DC guy. You know, he did all that art that they used in the toy lines and everything for years. Like, right. This is a very dark, there's cursing, there's nudity, there's awfulness in it.
There's a hood. He doesn't have trick arrows. He has, like, real arrows.
Yeah, so this is...
killing dudes.
I should have let you read this.
That's the least of the things he shouldn't let me read. So in this basically story, this is a Green Arrow living in... And this is also, like, older. He's very much older. So is Dinah, who is not Black Canary in this, but she's retired. She's still Black Canary, but she doesn't wear the costume or anything. They're very much, like, in their 40s. They're retired to Seattle. Well, not retired, but she's retired. And they're in Seattle running a florist shop. And he goes out at night with the hood and real steel-tipped arrows. There's no boxing glove arrows here. For years, this was my version of Green Arrow. This is what I thought of.
The flower shop called?
It's called Sherwood's Florist.
Sherwood's Florist.
Florist, that's right.
Sherwood's Florist. He wants to be
wonderful.
He wants to be found.
And it really just deals with street level stuff. I mean, so you've got six issues here. Each story is two-parter. The first one's about a child murderer who gets free from prison. The second story is about a Russian Chinese sort of proxy war for looking for this this. It was like a bug or a germ that fell out of a satellite, landed on an island by Seattle, and then he was sent out there against Eddie Fires, who becomes a major character. And the third story is about gay bashing and gay assaults at the park in Seattle by the local gangs. Yeah, I mean, this was serious, dark, street-level stuff.
Well, it's after the Denny O'Neill
Adams
stuff.
Way after, yeah.
But still.
This is 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
This was serious. This was serious business. I mean, this was Mike Grell getting to, explore society's ills through Green Arrow. Through a very sort of quote unquote realistic superhero story, and not for the faint of heart. I mean, this never really let up. As far as I knew of reading, I didn't read every single issue, but it stayed this tone for the whole run. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really surprised that they collected it. But I also, you can see a lot of the tone of the Arrow show in this book.
It was like Heart to Heart with Robert Wagner meets Death Wish.
Interesting.
Because you've got this couple that are, sort of working together on this stuff in this horrible, horribly named florist shop where he desperately wants to get
caught. Florist is an awesome name for a florist shop.
Not if you want to also
be a vigilante. Puns.
I love them. That would be a great name for my flower shop.
You think it's a if you're basically Robin Hood.
I'm agreeing with Josh that it's a terrible cover.
Is it worse than when he became mayor?
Yes. No.
No,
he wasn't trying to hide.
Lateral move.
It wasn't a secret.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
It was a secret. Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I guess I blocked that out because it was ridiculous. I forgot about that.
I mean, what I like about this is they're not quote unquote whitewashing anything. Like I was worried they might. Like the language is still in here.
Oh, really? You thought they would go and enjoy
pools of blood?
I thought they might.
Pools of blood, viscera.
The questionable coloring. They meet an American Indian woman who's colored with red skin.
Yeah,
that's a printing thing.
Coloring is super bold. Like, I mean, there's really violent scenes, and it's really not how we would color things today. I mean, it's like bright yellows, and it's just.
Well, it's very much of its. If you look back to the Swamp stories and the Sandman, this is how comics were done back then. I'm glad they're keeping it intact. I'm looking forward to more.
Me too. Definitely. It shouldn't be updated or anything.
What did you think overall? I mean, Paul, I read this as a kid, but you've never really read this before, right?
No, they put out Longbow Hunters a little while back, and I'd read that. And, I'd read that the most recent reprint of that. And then, I'd heard about this. Like, the Mike Grell run. And I did like this a lot.
This is different than the Longbow Hunters.
Longbow Hunters preceded this.
That was a three-parter, Longbow Hunters, and then this was the ongoing.
This comes out of that. You don't need to have read Longbow Hunters for this, though. The first story deals with some of it a little bit. But
that, right?
Grell?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Here he just writes cover. It. Okay, yeah. No, that's cool.
But it really is a different kind of Green Arrow. And Josh, I'd be very interested to see what you think. I mean, it's not... modern storytelling, but it's really down and dirty. So check it out.
It's interesting because it's not photoreal, but I guess it's the equivalent of photoreal at the time. And it's not, I mean, you think of like, you can go ultra dark with like Dark Knight Returns, but that's like super hyperbolic. Like it's really over the top. This just feels like they were going for street level. Like it takes place in the real world. You know, it's in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, not one of the fictional cities.
I don't remember if there was actually ever any other superheroes that showed up in this. Again, I didn't read the whole thing, and it was 1988, so I don't remember exactly, but I don't remember reading any. I don't know if they exist in this. They must have to some extent, but it's really sort of separate.
The only thing I wish that they'd put more into the volumes. Like it's, you know, the first six issues of a 10-year run.
Right.
So it's going to take 10,000 years to, you know, put this out.
I'm under no illusions this is actually going to complete.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the NAM collections, but... And, you know, it's not on good quality paper. They're under no illusions about how many people are actually going to buy this. But I'm hoping enough people do so that I can get at least a couple of these because I loved these when I was a kid.
It should just have like a cover blurb that just says here.
you know who you are and who's
here, DC.
Paul, did you get to read the whole thing?
Yeah.
Did you read my favorite sort of outlandish bit was when Green Arrow has to earn a respect from the local gang by running the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Are they the Van Buren boys?
Well, first of all, you got the kind of gangs that Tom Cater used to talk about in his podcast. So, like, a lot of them wear, like, headbands and vests and things. But he's got this gang's been attacking gays in the park. And, you know, he's basically stuck in this situation where he's surrounded by guns and everything. And he wants the respect of the gang. They'll let him go. And so he has to run the gauntlet, which is what they do for new recruits, where you have to run down this corridor of guys with, like, nunchucks and chains and bats and pipes as they beat on you.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty brutal. Great use of black and white scenes in this.
It's very much, I you know, I referenced Law and Order before. It's very much like I could see like Elliot Stabler involved in like this kind of undercover operation or, you know, getting to know the kids.
It's very much a gray story. I mean, like, you know, Oliver Queen is not above letting the gang people shoot each other and walking away because that's justice. So it's good stuff. I really like
it. Pools of Blood, yeah.
Green Arrow, Volume 1, The Hunter's Moon is the name of the book. If you're a Green Arrow fan or you like that era of comics or anything we just said sounds interesting, check it out.
That had to do with the comic. Not that
noise. Fanboys Book of the Month. Now, we're running short on time, but let's quickly mention that Image Comics Expo happened this week. Image Expo 2013, which is Image's own branded convention they do in each year now. And they announced 13 new books from some high-profile creators.
It's called Expo 2013?
Yeah.
Why isn't it? Okay.
Because it's the coming... Oh, good question. Why is it called
Because
that?
It's the coming... We are in 2014.
What year is it?
I don't know.
Was it called 2013, 2014?
I'm going to assume 2014. Since the Paul. One they had last
I think
year.
I think the article that I found that has a rundown of some of the things that came out said 2013, and that's not actually what it was.
Yeah, no, it's Image Comics 2014.
I apologize. That is my fault.
So lots of books came out from people like James Robinson, announced James Robinson, Rick Remender, Grant Morrison, Bill Willingham, Kieran Gillen, Scott Snyder, Nick Spencer, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Kyle Higgins, Josh Williamson, Joe Keating, tons of new books, Brandon Graham. Let's say, which one, Paul, are you most looking forward to?
Oh gosh. How about one that I'm sort of tossing and turning on? Like I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Sure.
I'm a big Michael Chabon fan. Uh-huh. I did not latch on to Casanova. He's gonna be doing some backup stories in Casanova. So I'm gonna try it. I don't know if it's gonna work for me though. Other things I am excited about. Rick Remender.
Yes.
And Greg Dashini, they worked on Last Days of American Crime.
And they did X-Force, too.
Yeah, that's right. And so they're doing a book called Low. I don't know what it's about. I want it.
Right. I'm looking forward to, obviously, the Scott Snyder Jock book, Witches.
Witches with a Y?
Witches?
Which Scott Snyder claims is going to be the most fucked up book he's ever written.
Yeah, I like that quote.
Awesome.
Wow.
supposed to be how witches were even worse than we thought they were.
Cool.
But the Snyder and Jock together is very intriguing.
Yes.
And I was really intrigued by the Grant Morrison, Chris Burnham.
Definitely.
Nameless, which I don't even know what it's about.
No, I don't want to know any more than that. I'm good with that.
And Remender, Cicchini, and Lowe. I mean, those are the three probably the most I'm looking forward to.
I am looking forward to the James Robinson book.
Which sounds crazy.
Because it sounds crazy. And then I heard what it was about, and then I saw the image, and I was like, it really is that thing that they said it was about.
What is it?
It's in the book.
It's a book about James Robinson on art and Greg Hinkle on James Robinson on story, Greg Hinkle on art, and it's about the two of them trying to do an Airboy comic. It's kind of like,
which should be public domain, but I think,
and it gets weird. They go like on a drug and alcohol trip. It's funny because Robinson's newly sober, so that's gonna be interesting. When you're writing that,
that could be incredibly honest in that way. I think that could be fascinating. I mean, it could be a disaster, but it could be amazing. And that's the one that has the most.
The Airboy character comes to life at some point, or either is a hallucination, but it's apparently some sort of drug fueled trip into trying to write a comic.
And that doesn't even sound like something I like, but I've met Robinson. I've read a lot of his work, and he's fascinating. So
and he's very honest. He's exceedingly honest. So.
Yeah, and I like that a lot.
I haven't seen this kind of thing since The Exhibitionists. No, not The Exhibitionists. The Escapists.
I tell you what could be interesting. I only look at names. I really do. I don't even check to see what things are about most of the time. I just look who's involved or what it looks like. And the Willingham and Kitson thing. I love Kitson's work. It's got an elegance to it. And Willingham can tell some good stories. He's been sort of waist deep in fables for such a long time. It'd be interesting to see him create another thing.
We'd be remiss to not mention Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey together. From what I've read, McKelvey's doing the first arc, and then he's going off. They're doing the third Phonogram.
Right.
Well,
where's Phonogram?
And then McKelvey comes back after Phonogram. So, but it's still going to be interesting. I don't even The Wicked and the Divine. Don't know what it's about. Don't care.
These are great titles. One that jumped out at me, Bitch Planet, which is a great title. By Kelly Sue DeConnick and Delandro, and I really enjoyed her work, Kelly Sue DeConnick's work in 2013. Like, I really like Captain Marvel. I really like Pretty Deadly. So I'm interested in that one. What about the Brubaker thing, where he's got like this multi-year deal where he can do whatever he wants.
Brubaker's got like a carte blanche thing. Him and Sean Phillips are doing a book, and then they said it'll sound like feel like Criminal. And then they're going to do whatever they want for 5 years, something like that.
Do you think there's like a thing where they've got turned down a lot prior to that? Listen, you guys have nixed so many of the things that we want to do. I need you to write down that we can do whatever we want.
There was a quote from Brubaker where he said, it's like having your own movie studio and being able to do whatever you want. Like, he's got just like a sandbox where he can just do anything. And that's kind of exciting.
Well, what I'm saying is,
I know that like that sort of exists, like pretty much, you know, informally.
We call that the Joe Casey agreement.
But you have that like written out, you know, in front of you, like to have that formally recognized. Probably the impetus for a lot of imagination. I would think.
He's savvy.
That's what happened to me when you're like, do whatever you want on iFanboy, and I like wrote crazy shit.
Yeah, right. But there was no stakes. He's still got to make sure people get paid. He's commercial enough.
He knows. I mean, he knows.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. You want to write Mindcarp, you do it all day, and I'll pay you for it in the past. Which I guess fits the... Anyway.
I think the point is lots of exciting announcements were made, and we praised Image last year. They were our publisher of the year. They did a lot of exciting things last year. There was things they announced last year still haven't come out, like Jason Aaron's book that we're looking forward to.
At least said that wasn't coming out for a while.
Right, no, we knew that. What I'm saying is 2014 is going to be, I think, another strong year for them in terms of creative output and interesting comics that are being made. So lots of exciting things at Image Expo 2013.
14.
As I delete that and change it.
Sorry.
We're skipping audience questions because we had the book of the month and the Image Expo to talk about, but we'll bring those back next week. In the meantime, if you've got a question you want to get on the show, email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Keep your voicemail to 30 seconds and tell us your name and where you're from in both. And give us some interesting. Let's kick off 2014 right with some real good audience questions.
Yes.
Please. Let's do another relationship show.
Sure.
Let's do one of those.
Send in your questions.
Start sending in your relationship.
You guys are all domestic now. It's not going to be fun.
No, it's still fun.
That's why we have you.
Yeah.
So sometime down the line, we'll do another show with all relationship question emails, which we haven't done in years, but let's do that again.
Okay.
Paul, plug your shows.
Plugs. A lot of fun stuff.
Are these shows coming out in 2013, Paul?
These are things that are coming up this month. They're coming up in January of 2014.
Wait, it's 2014?
It's 2014. Adjust your checks. So, yeah. If you're watching The Justified.
My story address on them.
The new season of Justified on the FX, which has the movies. Fuzzy Typewriter, we're going to be doing that weekly. That's the plan anyway.
Doing every episode, huh?
We're going to do that.
Wow.
Yep. We're still going to put, I've been banking those Cheers episodes, so we'll be talking about Cheers. Booksplode, Akira Volume 1 and 2 by Katsuhiro Otomo. That's going to be on Booksplode. That Scotty Young is going to come on and talk about it. We're going to record that next week. So it'll be coming out quickly. So read those books. And then over on CBR, Comic Book Resources, every Sunday around noontime Eastern, check out Sunday Conversation. This week, it's already up by the time you're listening to this. Joshua Hale Fialkov, it gets dark pretty quick.
Really?
Let's talk about how he transcribed therapy notes when he was 7 years old for his psychiatrist dad.
Eee.
Who did like courtroom like therapy sessions. And he had to transcribe all the like, you know, those sessions. So that's interesting.
That
and
we guy also has talk- a problem with being candid.
And we also talk about Gilmore Girls.
Ooh, good.
So, as usual, a totally schizophrenic Sunday conversation. And that's what's coming up. And we're also going to do a special edition show on the new Justice League War?
Right.
That's the DC one. Animated thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. We should mention The Fade Out is the name of Brubaker and Phillips' book. The Fade Out. All right. Okay. GodFanWay.com. Comment on this show. Comment fade on any out. Of the shows we do. As we fade out in this episode, follow us on twitter.com/iFanboy. That's where you will find, also at facebook.com/iFanboy. That's where you'll find Paul picked his book very early on a Wednesday.
I wanted to get a jump on things. I was like, there are a lot of books this week. I'm going to get a jump on it Wednesday because lately I've been leaving it to, you know, the very last minute.
And I double taked in a big way.
Yeah.
It was like 11. A.M. East
on the
Coast
East Coast.
Time.
I read some stuff early, and then I woke up very early on Wednesday, and I was like, let's do this.
Do this.
Because I had a lot of interviews to do towards the end of the week. So, but I did read a bunch of stuff, and I...
That's where you can know what the pick's going to be before the show.
And I stand by my pick, so...
It's a great pick. Awesome.
Yeah, like he said, you can know that there. You can email us. We won't tell you, though. You'd have to look on those other places. At contact@fanboy.com with your relationship questions. Or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Again, actually, boy, audio is the best way to go with the relationship questions.
That's true. We want some relationship voicemails.
Yeah.
We want to hear the pain and the despair.
I would like to hear both sides.
Yes. Ooh, you can have your side, and then the other side can call in with the rebuttal.
And we can,
that's
we
even
can,
better.
We can make judgment.
Oh.
We can hand down our answer.
So I'm liking this idea even more.
Who's deciding what happens with the house? These guys in a podcast. What's the podcast about? It's about comic books. Yeah, but they've been doing it a long time, okay?
It's about more than comic books.
It's about life, love.
About life.
But didn't they do a relationship show before? Yeah, yeah. How many of them are still together? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. It was years ago. Things changed. What are you going to do?
How many divorces have there been?
The one guy is just the one. No. No, not even at that time. It had already happened by then. It's fine.
Oh, boy.
I'm not talking about me.
Good stuff.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I don't think I was old enough to date when you did the first relationship show.
We're old. So. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
God, remember we did the video one? That was like 5 serious girlfriends ago for me.
All right, before Connor gets in too much trouble, if you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us, tell your significant other about us, and
think about that.
Try to convince them that we know what's best for you, the both of you, or the three of you, depending on the relationship.
We're not unlike King Solomon.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say.
We'll hand down rulings from on high.
We'll hand down judgment. One more plug. What?
I'm also a new regular co-host on Book Rageous, which is about, you know, comics and other books, like with the no pictures. So check out the Book Rageous podcast.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know where you find the time.
I'm on all the podcasts. I have to be.
You have to, or what?
They asked me over the holidays. I'm like, are you sure?
Or a hobo dies.
Yep.
Until next week.
That's how we got it.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I don't know anything about Slippery Pete. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.